Season 4, episode 21 is Paris Burning. It opens up with what I thought was an abnormally long intro song. Because usually there's like
right.
a... Yeah, you
that
noticed
was
it too.
The first thing I wrote down.
I guess they could do that to make up for time. Because maybe it didn't. The episode didn't come in as much as it usually does. But it seemed like a long intro song.
It was abnormally long. Yeah, it was one of the first things that I noticed.
Medavoy comes to a scene where Martinez is already there, and it appears a man has hijacked a bus and tried to get it through a alleyway that it was too narrow for. An old lady mentions that the gentleman on the bus, who was tall, gawky, white hair, drunk, and singing Irish serenades, took control of the bus after she mentioned that her cat does business on the carpet if she gets home late.
He can do all those things and drive a bus. Kind of a keeper, right?
Well, I think he was drunk from the bar, so he wasn't sitting there drinking. But singing Irish serenades, I mean, you know, he's the total package.
He's tall.
She did mention that he could lose 30 pounds, so maybe she's not into fatties.
Yeah, subtle shot.
Another passenger said that he noticed him from the alibi lounge. Then the driver of the bus shows up, and he freaks out. Now, I don't know if you thought this, but when I saw the bus driver, and he was like, Mother of God, I was like, if this was an HBO show, he would have been like, Motherfucker! Fucking unbelievable! Yeah. Like, it would have been, like, way more... It would have been ridiculous.
He would have been way more upset. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The only other important thing about this scene, really, is Medavoy takes this time to mention to Martinez... Because Martinez asks about Abby, if you remember the lesbian who's trying to have a baby with Medavoy's sperm. When Martinez asks Medavoy, who's kind of a weirdo, he says, I don't know, Martinez, but it wasn't my sperm, because I gave her... Did I write it down?
He says something along the lines like, oh, if she's not pregnant, it's not my fault, because I gave her a sizable donation or something like that, sizable load.
I gave her a lot of sperm, is what he says. She got
basically.
She got the jumbo jack of sperm from me.
Jumbo jack, wow! Way to ruin the jumbo jack.
You don't have it over on the East Coast, so it don't matter.
Whatever it is.
So the bus driver says you can't even take a piss in the city, and Martinez says. And not Martinez. Medavoy says something, and I wanted to read it because it's weird as hell. Many's the occasion that I've regretted my small bladder capacity.
Yeah. Like, is he just trying to say, like, I have to pee?
I think he's just trying to be Shakespearean of the fact that he has also had to pee at inopportune times, but he can't just say it like a normal person.
Because he's a fucking weirdo.
And then, because Martinez was there for his big amount of sperm conversation, he says, hey, don't feel too bad, because you do have that high semen intake. And it's like, and that's how the, that's when the theme song comes in, after that weird exchange.
Yeah, because doesn't, like, the bus driver give him attitude? And then the bus driver's like, I gotta go call my dispatcher. And then, so Medavoy gives him, like, attitude right back, so Martinez makes that comment about, oh, why don't you go tell him how much sperm you gave?
It's awkward. I think it wasn't so much attitude, it was him going, like, why the fuck are you trying to relate to me about bladder capacity? What did you say? Because he said it so weird and, like, Shakespearean. Like, he couldn't just say, like, a normal person that he just got confused. And he's like, I gotta call my dispatcher. Anyway... We're into the theme song. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. All right, when we come back from the break, do we want to... Yeah, the break of dawn. Do we want to continue with the bus story, or do we go over the Simone stuff first? I'm kind of thinking we do the bus story just because it's quicker and easier.
Okay. Yeah, it's not even the best stuff.
No.
The best stuff is the Simone stuff.
The episode, or when the show comes back after the theme song, Fancy's actually on the phone with Medavoy and Martinez, we assume, because Fancy tells them to go to the alibi lounge to ask around for this guy. So, the next time we see Martinez and Medavoy, they're at the Alibi Lounge talking to the bartender, and they give a description of the guy, kind of tall, lumbering, a little overweight, and then out of the bathroom comes Vince Catelli.
Vinny boy.
Played by Carmine Carini, who was in The Godfather, who is now no longer with us. He comes out of the bathroom.
Oh, where'd he go? Did we lose him?
He died, Kyle. He died. He's a dead man now.
What was he in The Godfather?
I think he was kind of a background dude. I think he was in The Godfather and Godfather Part 2, but not 3, because he knew when to get out. Kind of like
Al Pacino did it.
Kind of like Robert Duvall.
Yeah, but Pacino was taking that money.
Oh yeah, they got paid for sure. They got paid off of that weird incest storyline. Godfather 3 is weird. Godfather 3 is really fucking weird and bad. They're at the Alibi Lounge, and it's kind of awkward because they can tell that Vince probably did it, and Vince is being very passive-aggressive, little jabs at Martinez becoming the new delegate.
And he also jabs about his health.
He also jabs that, is this just payback for me stealing your quarters? Which,
yeah.
I don't know how that would be.
That fucking quarter shit.
It's kind of funny how he's like, look, okay, so I drove a bus into an alleyway. Why are you coming back at me about the quarters? Like, it's also interesting that Russell shows up because she gets rerouted to their team to cover this bus issue. And when she gets there, Martinez and Medavoy are like, yeah, we're just talking to Vince about this bus incident. And Vince is like, oh, are you the third matador to put the lance through the bull? And it's like, Vince, you're not a bull anymore.
Well, at least he has confidence.
And then they ask him, like, did you do some joyriding of a bus providing door-to-door service? And he's like, my father drove buses 30 years.
That was a really weird story.
Because if my dad drove buses for 30 years, that doesn't make me think I could drive buses.
I mean, he probably, like, taught him, but...
You think he went out with him on the route, learned the ins and outs of driving a bus?
Did you, like, one day? I mean, like, in a Bronx Tale, De Niro's driving a bus, and his son's sometimes on there with him. So I could definitely see, like, if no one was on the bus, he had him, like, sit on his lap and taught him how to drive it.
Okay, you know what? Maybe I had it wrong. Maybe Vince was taught how to drive a bus, but maybe not driving it drunk.
No, but, like, for 30 fucking years, too, man. Like, at some point, he probably did it.
I mean, that's interesting. That's an interesting take on it, because let's say, okay, your dad drove buses 30 years, you watched and maybe drove with him. That, in my mind, doesn't make you qualified to then take a bus.
Oh, no, I agree with you. But I'm just saying, I thought you were kind of hung up on, like, how does he know how to drive a bus? And it's like, well, like, I could totally see him being able to drive a bus. That's all.
They end that conversation at the Alibi Bar, or Alibi Lounge, where he says, okay, I guess I'm going to be going with these guys. I'm not under arrest, and points at the bartender, like the bartender is going to judge him or something.
Yeah, he didn't want his name tarnished, basically.
Which is, it's super interesting to me, because I feel like bartenders are like, look, man, I know you think we're friends because I talk to you, but I'm just slinging drinks to your ass. So, obviously, I don't know your real personal life.
Yeah, like, I don't give a fuck.
When they get back to the house, there's a little subtle hi, Gina, from Martinez. Because, you know, they're a thing. And they say,
the two
Vince...
The worst actors trying to act like they're in love. It's crazy.
And then Vince, they tell Vince, okay, we'll talk in the coffee room, and he just yells out, let's make it as public as possible. And it's like, well, I think you're doing that by yelling. Medavoy's like, I gotta go talk to Fancy, and because Vince works there, he's like, yeah, run me down to the boss. And they drag him into the coffee room, and when they go...
Vince is being kind of a little bitch, like, let's be real.
Yeah, he is. And this conversation's amazing, because Medavoy says to Fancy, so we think Vince took the bus. And Fancy's like, what? And he's like, yeah, it seems like it's pretty clear that he took that bus. And their first thoughts are, did anybody see you bring him in and did you report it? And he's like, no, and they say, no, nobody knows yet. Medavoy says, man, he's only 6 months from 30 years. And Fancy's like, "Don't I already know that, Medavoy. You don't need to tell me." And then Fancy says, take his account, but don't file it. And it's and he also says, did he show his badge to get on the bus? So it becomes clear that, hey, we've agreed that he did this thing that's wrong. Now we're trying to figure out how to keep him safe.
Well, we agree that he's done this thing that, like, if anyone else did, would go to jail for it.
Yeah, they'd be bringing him in and they'd be like, oh, so you think you're a bus driver? Do you, have you thought about how many people you'd hurt doing that? Do you think about the amount of money it costs the taxpayers? No, because it's Vince, who is 6 months from 30 years, because it's him, we're trying to figure out how to get it just taken care of.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And also, there has been lots of talk about how Vince is not that good of a cop. It's just that he is one.
And the level, and it's like the levels they go through to protect him is like kind of unbelievable.
And Fancy
mentions,
yeah, Fancy mentions to Medavoy, hey, I'll talk to the driver supervisor to see where he's at. He's like, so we're going to try and see how bad the driver is, because if he's a real piece of shit, then we can just kind of wave off what what our guy did. Because
oh no, I don't think they were trying to. I don't think they were trying to see what like the driver was like. I think they were trying to see how like does the driver want to press charges and like put this out there, or does the driver is the driver cool with like trying to just like let this go and let it go away? That's what I think they were gonna. He wanted to find out. Fancy's whole goal is to cover it up, to make it act like it didn't exist. So he wants to make sure that the driver's not like mad and pissed off and will want to pursue it more. That's what I think.
Because the next scene regarding the story, Fancy is talking to the supervisor of the transit authority. It's kind of a weird scene because it seems like Fancy just smooths it over through some nice, deceitful talk.
Yeah.
Because he says... Sure. Because the guy's like, we've talked... Because Fancy is, like, very cool collecting. He's like, we've talked to all the passengers and the driver, and we've taken statements. He's like, yeah, except from the guy that stole the bus. He's like, yeah, we haven't caught that guy. Anyway, I've been thinking about this. I could put a lot of manpower on this situation. But then, the press gets involved. They start pouring into the life of your driver. They start asking what your driver did. Then suddenly lawyers get involved and they want to get lawsuits going for the sake of the passengers. And then the guy's like, look, maybe it wasn't that big a deal.
Yeah.
And it was the other part where when Fancy is like, did anybody see the bus? Like, was the bus there a long time? The guy like brags, no, I got it out of there pretty quick.
Right there, if this was like on HBO or something, he would have been like, I got that bitch out there fast. I got that bitch out of there quick.
No offense to anybody that works in transit, but I felt like the guy was pretending like, look, I'm a big player. I run the buses in this city.
And I'll offend everyone who works in transit because it sucks. So
he says, you know what? It's cool. You don't have to look for this guy anymore because nobody got hurt. The end of the story and the end of the episode, because I guess they tried to add weight to what happened to Vince. Fancy sits Vince down and says, I got this whole thing smoothed over. There's not going to be any charges, and they're not going to look to do anything to you. Vince is, like, overjoyed, and then Fancy's like, you got to retire.
Yeah, Fancy kind of gets what he wants.
He's like, you need to retire, you'll get 3/4 on disability, and what's so annoying is Vince the last couple episodes was like, look, man, my heart, look, I'm hurt, look at this, like, I'm not healthy, I'm not doing well. And then when Fancy's like, look, you won't get 30 years, but you can get 3/4 with disability, he's like, I'm not gonna tell everybody I'm sick.
Yeah.
And it's like, right? That's what you've fucking been doing the last couple weeks.
Like, he starts bitching about, like, being a man and not letting people know, like, he's sick or whatever, but, yeah, little bitch.
And the thing I wanted to ask is... Did he really need Vince to retire? The answer is no, because he completely washed over everything that happened. He's just doing it to get the problem out of his house.
Oh, 100%. He did all of that work to get rid of a shitty employee who's going to cause nothing but trouble.
In his mind, if he was a bad boss, this is another one of the things in the entries of Fancy's an amazing boss that's underappreciated. Fancy could have done a couple things, but he could have just said, go forward with it. What happens to Vince, it was his fault, he shouldn't have done that. Or he could have washed it under the rug like he did and then said, hey Vince, you need to lay low for 6 months and not fucking do anything. If you get caught like this again, you're out. Or he did what he did, which is, hey, I got this cleared for you, you gotta leave now so nothing like this ever happens again, because I can't have it. Because it only makes the job harder for everybody we work with. With that said, I was like, man, Fancy's the best.
I think he also did it to protect the police department, because it wouldn't look good if a detective stole a New York City bus and fucking went on a joyride.
Yeah, that's true. That's
a big deal.
That's the end of the episode. What's mostly going on in this episode has to do with Simone, which right after the theme song, Simone rolls into Fancy's office and says, you gave me a 911 page, what's the emergency?
He jokingly thought he was getting fired.
It turns out IAB flagged the plate that he ran for Joey Salvo.
Joey Sal!
And he's like, okay, well, we could just explain that the FBI wanted me to do that. And then the FBI dudes walk in and said, we don't want you to cooperate with IAB. We want you to feed them false information so we can see who Joey Salvo's hook in IAB is.
They want him to keep fucking with everybody, right?
The FBI clearly thinks they know someone is corrupt in the IAB. They don't want to cooperate with IAB to figure out who that is. They want to do their own thing and use Simone to do it.
They don't want to give it away, you know?
Yeah, because they think, oh, if we go after him like this, then that guy will know what's up, and then he'll be more careful, and they'll figure out a way to get away with it. So they're just going to screw with Simone to get to that guy. And they kind of try and soothe over Simone by saying, don't worry, we promise you'll have your job and it'll all be cool. And Simone says, that's a lot of double talk for bite the pillow and take your screwing.
Yeah, he's trying to be tough there. Cute.
And he's like, well, we want to know what you'd like to do. He's like, I got to talk to my boss. And then when it's just Fancy and him, Fancy says, like, hey, man, calm down. We'll work through it. I'll be by your side once it gets through. And Simone kind of bites at Fancy and says, why didn't you stand up for me more? And he was like, what did you want me to do?
Do you think he could have stood up for him more?
I don't think so. I think once you get the FBI involved and they're hot-dogging and whatnot...
They're hot-dogging and whatnot.
They're pulling that shit where they walk in and said, this is my jurisdiction now, kind of fucking shit. So Fancy really couldn't have done anything. But in fairness, this all started because they said okay to agreeing to Joey Salvo in the first place. I think...
Yeah. Well, first of all, like, this whole thing is a travesty because they agreed to this stupid thing. So, this half-assed plan by this FBI.
So, they tentatively agree that he's not going to cooperate with IAB and give false information until they find out who the hook is. Fancy knows that he's going to tell Russell, and he's like, I wouldn't tell her this because that'll just jam at both of you.
He's like, you can blow me. I'm going to tell her.
Well, he says, like, then they could suspend me and write me up and do whatever they want to, but I'm going to tell her. As he's telling Russell the situation, Sipowicz comes out of the bathroom, and because Sipowicz is a keen detective, he knows something is up, but they won't tell him. And what breaks that tension is Fancy gives them an assault rape, which is very interesting. They say to Sipowicz, how's it going? Awkwardly. And then Fancy's like, we got an assault rape over here. And then Sipowicz grabs his, like, hey, how's it going to Fancy? Like a dick.
Yeah, well, Sipowicz turns into, like, a fucking teenage girl.
Oh, yeah.
And gets all mad and shit and, like, pouts the whole time because no one's talking to him or telling him stuff. And it's like, dude, this is bigger than you. Like, fucking chill.
I think it's because of that kinship between partners. He believes, like, if something's going on, I should know about it because I'm your partner and we do everything together at work. That's even more clear when the next scene they go to the radio car, or not the radio car, they go to their car to leave, and Sipowicz is like, look, don't turn off my music and then don't talk to me. And Simone's like, okay. And then they get into the car, he's like, or you could stop keeping me in the dark and tell me what the hell's going on. And
doesn't he make a comment about him, like, sitting there staring out the window?
Yeah, he's like, the last couple days you turn off my music and then you just stare out the window and don't talk to me. Don't do that.
Such a little, like, fucking teenager.
There's a lot of funny Sipowicz writing in this episode and the next episode where he talks about keeping me in the dark for an insulting period of time. If it's domestic problems, you might be shocked that I'm acquainted with those. And Simone says, I cannot tell you, can you let me up here? And Sipowicz just says, consider yourself up, and then drives away.
consider yourself up.
They go to the apartment of Sonia Hudson, who was assaulted, raped, and then robbed based on the apartment. And
triple threat.
Oh, the triple threat. Yeah, it's the 1-2-3. It's
assaulted,
the 1-2-3 punch.
And robbed.
Oh, shit. There's a guy looking over the scene from an apartment across the way, and he looks pretty skittish. Sipowicz says, "I got Mr. Peepers." And goes to check him out. Kind of random, he's in apartment 2B, and so was David Schwimmer in the early episodes, since it was 2B or not to be. Interesting. The guy in the apartment is named Stephen Cameron, played by Richard Schiff, who is a famous face. He was in The West Wing and earlier episodes of NYPD Blue. He was in The Lost World and Seven and Man of Steel. The dude's been in a lot of shit.
Who was he in Man of Steel?
He was one of the, like, doctors in the military that was, like, testing Superman. I've only seen it once.
Okay.
But there was, like, a part where they, quote-unquote, arrested him when he was in an interrogation. Like, he just ripped out of the things and started talking to him through the one-way mirror.
I watch Man of Steel all the time. I love it.
Is that true? That can't be true.
You'll never know.
I don't even think Superman fans watch Man of Steel all the time. Anyway, back to the show. Richard Schiff, he's playing Steve Cameron, who is a skittish neighbor, I guess. Come to find out, he's actually the landlord of the building and the building next door. He clearly saw something, and Sipowicz sniffed it out, but he's really, really scared. Sipowicz kind of pulls some strongman bullshit on him, where he's like, you're going to open the door, or I'm going to break it down. Get your shit, you're coming to the house. And the guy keeps saying things like, I'm coming on my own volition, I can leave when I want. And they're like, sure, whatever, just get in the car.
He keeps threatening, he's like, oh, I'm gonna get the super. And the guy's like, I am the super.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the bus is exhausted, all of this shit.
They do get him back to the house. He's one of these guys who clearly understands how they play it, where there's a good cop and a bad cop, and they want to be his friend, and they want to make sure everything will be alright. And he kind of slips that he's just scared for himself, that he thinks this guy's going to make bail, and then he's going to hurt him. But he eventually, at the end of that first interview, gives a name and the apartment number of the guy who did it, because he lives in his other building.
But I 100% thought that he was, like, autistic.
You thought he, like, had a real deal spectrum issue?
Yeah, like, I thought he was, like, an autistic dude who, like, watches, like, a lot of Law and Order and shit, or, like, crime shows, and so, like, he like, understands the stereotypes and all that, but he was, like on some kind of spectrum, for sure.
Yeah, there was kind of a part of that, because he starts talking to himself, like, he starts playing characters in a show as if what's going on is a show. So, you are right there. It's also, the reason I'm not going really deep into these conversations is he just does a really good job. Richard Schiff, who plays Stephen Cameron, he is a really good actor, and then when he's across from Dennis Franz as Sipowicz and Jimmy Smits as Simone, like, it's a really good scene. When he eventually gives up the name, you could tell, like, oh my god, he's really scared. Like, he thinks this guy is going to kill him if he gets out. They go to get that guy, Gary Wilder, who keeps talking about how he's got a clean record. And Sipowicz looks him straight in the face and says, You know, you never know when you meet, like, the first second you meet someone, you know they're a lion sack of crap, and then throws them into the cage.
Witty, oh, witty Sipowicz.
Oh, yeah, he's the wittiest. They kind of go at him, and he claims he has a migraine. I didn't get this actor's name, but I thought he didn't do that good of a job. Mr. Gary Wilder.
Yeah, he was whatever.
He was very whatever, which kind of sucks, because what he ends up doing, if they got a good actor, it would have been, like, a really good role, even though it was short. He claims he has a migraine, he has no idea what they're talking about. So they take his picture and take it over to Stephen Cameron, and he is really freaked out and scared, and he sees his picture, he's like, what, so you have him inside here, are you going to arrest him? And he's like, yeah, that's what we're going to try and do now. And he's like, I'm not going to leave here until you arrest him. And Sipowicz makes the crack, so you'll become like a station house mascot.
Oh, yeah.
And then the guy has a moment where he says, look, you guys don't even care what happens to me. And Sipowicz drops the facade and says, look, man, what you did takes balls, and I respect that. Now I'm going to go arrest this dude to try and give him some calm and some reassurance. They go to arrest him and such.
Sipowicz says all the things that you, like, shouldn't.
Why do you say that?
The guy's freaking out. Sipowicz knows he's freaking out. And Sipowicz, like, cracks a joke about him staying there forever instead of just, like, staying quiet and doing his job. He's that guy who says whatever is on his mind at work, the annoying one.
I guess because of the way he reacts later, I didn't think so, but you are right in that moment. He shouldn't have made a joke, because that dude is clearly scared out of his mind. During that time, there's a lot of inter-office communication, because everybody meets in the house, so Simone checks up with Russell, who he's also shocked that Vince stole the bus. There's a weird flirtatious moment where Russell mentions, hey, when you grab my wrist, it hurt, and he was like, trained detective, and gave her, like, the Simone eye, which was kind of like, you just wait till later.
I'm gonna get it in.
This trained detective is gonna do some sleuthing around your undercarriage. Yeah. Oh, wow.
You just called it an undercarriage. Think about that.
While they're setting up the arrest for that guy, they mention that Cohen is riding, so he's gonna have to talk to him about making sure the guy stays in jail and doesn't get an easy bail. While that happens, IAB shows up for...
You know, you just rhymed.
Did I?
You were like, he wants to make sure the guy goes to jail, so he's got to make sure he doesn't get an easy bail.
Well, you know, I'm working on my rhymes in my off time, Kyle.
That's good, man. That's good. You're getting so good, you just slip them in without even noticing.
Yeah, you got to stay hungry, you know, for those battle raps.
You got to stay hungry for the game, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because if there's anything that I know, it's underground hip-hop culture. IAB comes for Simone, and all the rooms are taken. So Fancy says you should take it downstairs. And because they still haven't told Sipowicz anything, he passive-aggressively says, you got a minute for me, Cohen? Being as how no one else chooses to converse with me.
Again, being a little bitch.
Being a little girl about it. He runs down with Cohen what's going on. Because obviously he doesn't like Cohen. Most of the people in that precinct don't like Cohen. Because he's a bit of a smarmy ass.
Yeah, for sure.
But Sipowicz, like, really puts it out there, like, hey, I really need you to make sure this guy doesn't make bail. We got him for the robbery, rape, and assault with a witness who saw the immediate aftermath. He isn't doing this for revenge or to just put a guy in jail. He's really messed up by it, and I need you to make sure this guy stays in the system, because this guy is scared to death he'll get out and hurt him. Cohen says, like, oh yeah, I'll put a note in the file, blah, 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 blah. And then Sipowicz kind of gets closer, and he's like, look, could you please be there for the arraignment, and could you please voice the concern? Like, ask him to go the extra mile, because he's scared for this guy. And Cohen, because he's an asshole, says, if every fascist looked out for victims and witnesses as well as you do, Sipowicz, Bill of Rights issues would be a lot more complicated. And Sipowicz's response was, this day is going bad enough. If I were you, I wouldn't be making any wisecracks.
Because Sipowicz is kind of, like, open with him and, like, vulnerable about a situation and asks him for his help, and he normally doesn't ask for help.
No.
Colin's a douche about it.
And if you've noticed, like, the relationship between them, like, in every single episode, he's, like, never said anything nice to Cohen.
Yeah.
Cohen and him have always been at odds with each other, and this time, Sipowicz, like you said, he doesn't just go, hey, could you do this for me? He's like, I really, really would like you to do this for me and for this guy. I know you have a job and I have a job, but this is, like, really serious. And Cohen's just like, ha, 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 I'm a lawyer. Sipowicz is like, okay, well, if you're going to be a dick, I can just punch you in the face.
I'm a lawyer.
Simone...
No, Cohen's a douche, 100%.
Yeah, Cohen, he's a douche. And I feel bad for him at the end of this episode, but he's still a douchebag. Simone...
I don't feel bad for him.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there and we'll talk about it. Simone meets Martens, and Martens asks him about the plate, and Simone ain't giving him shit. He's playing dumb and playing asshole. And Martens, in my opinion, is probably one of the unsung heroes of the show, because everybody just shits on him, but he's done really not that much to deserve it.
Other than him just doing his job.
He even mentions in this episode about something about doing his job that makes the point that that's kind of a fucked up thing to do, but he's just trying to get Simone to cooperate and let him know what's going on so he doesn't have to do these things. But Simone's not budging.
Yeah, Simone's making it tough.
And Martens...
making him work for it.
And Martens asks the questions, and when Simone's kind of just, you know, playing dumb, he then turns off the recorder, and he's like, okay, what are you doing? Because he knows Simone isn't like this.
He says to him, you gonna keep jerking me off all day?
Well, I mean, Martens and Simone have had, a pretty decent relationship. Martens let some shit go on Simone because he knew they were bullshit, and they've helped each other out on occasion.
Yeah, they have.
So Martens kind of has a right to be like, "Why are you being a dick right now? I don't think I've ever done anything to you to get this treatment." And Simone, because he's clever like that, he knows Martens is a stand-up guy, so he says to him, "Look, everything's a situation, like you said a couple months ago." And Martens is like, okay, well, can you tell me what the situation is? And he's like, no, I can't. That's the part of the situation. So then Martens says, I'm going to have to go after you.
What a paradox.
And I really like the scene because Martens is Martens is the straightest shooter of IAB. And he says, look, I understand that you might be in this situation, but my bosses are going to require more than that.
Yeah. So he basically says, we're going to have to come after you.
And Simone puts his head on the wall behind him and says, do what you have to do.
Do what you gotta do, punk.
And it cuts to the next morning where Russell and Simone are kind of awkward.
Yeah, he's being really distant. She's being... And then she, can feel it. And instead of, kind of... I feel like she doesn't really, understand.
No, and Simone gets a call from Joey Salvo, and he even mentions...
How'd you get my number?
Yeah, he's like, how'd you get my number? Oh, I must have forgot. And then Russell's like, you gave him your number? And he's like, no, I didn't. He's just showing me his reach. And the other awkward thing, he says to Russell, maybe we should go in separate. I think because he knew that there was some shit going down at his office, because when he gets there, IAB is going through all of his paperwork... And Sipowicz is on the phone with Cohen screaming at him and trying to get a hold of this super Steve who he can't get a hold of.
Yeah, but I also think he was trying to protect her because if IAB's looking at him and they drive in together or come in together, they can, implicate her in some of the shit.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not what he wants for her.
So Sipowicz, I really like this episode because of how intense Sipowicz gets, especially in this scene. Because he's yelling at Cohen keep telling me how you left the note and you did your best. That's really working out. He hangs up the phone and goes to Simone. And he's like, so you're going to tell me what's going on? He's like, I told you. And he's like, you told me, dick. And he's like, those are my names on the files. And now I want to know what they're looking for. And then...
Well, it was kind of interesting that the IAB came back the next day.
Oh, yeah.
Went hard at him.
They went hard, because they got, four guys looking through all of his paper. Did you notice that when Martens goes to get Simone to talk to him privately, Sipowicz gets right up in his face and he goes, "Off the record, kiss my male unit." That was clearly dubbed. Like, it was clearly dubbed. He said something else. They had to change it.
I didn't. I'll have to go back and look at that.
If you look at his mouth, I don't know what he said that they had to change, but I think they had to change what happened, because he doesn't say, "Kiss my male unit." I think he probably is like, "Fuck off," or... It literally seemed like it was a HBO edit, or like a TV edit of a movie.
Edit of something. Interesting.
Sipowicz then lets Simone know that the woman dead and the perp made bail, and he can't find the landlord. And then there's another dubbed line as Simone goes to talk to Martens, where he says, "Strange things occur." But it wasn't on Sipowicz's face, and it was so clearly not recorded at the same time, so I think they recorded that to cover up something that he said. So it's very weird. That whole scene has different audio tracks somewhere. Simone and Martens have a conversation where Martens is like, "Look, I know the FBI is looking into Joey Salvo, and the plate you hit is the FBI's. So can you just tell me what's going on?" And Simone's like, "No." And then Martens even, like, calls it out, like, saying, like, "Oh, you're probably in the middle of this and you have nothing to do with it." And he's like, "Why don't you talk to me, and why doesn't the FBI reach out?" And he's like, "You gotta talk to the FBI. I don't know."
I mean, for as much as Simone is hating all of it, he's still doing everything he needs to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he's still following all the orders that they want him to follow, and he's doing everything he's supposed to do, even though he's, like, hating it so much.
Martens lets him know that his office is going to hang him out, is going to sit him down, most likely. Simone's like, "I got to go work my shift." When he comes back out, Andy's still pissed off because he cannot get a hold of Steven. He's talking about how he's trying all of his beepers and his numbers, and he's not responding. And then one of the IAB guys puts some paper on top of Medavoy's desk, and he screams, "That's a working detective's desk, you asshole cheese eater."
Yeah, he gets real mad about it, real fast. Kind of funny.
I understand his frustration, kind of. Because it's like, if you're going to go through my shit, you can fucking stand. Like, we have work to do, you're just looking through your own kind and whatever.
Yeah.
Fancy gets involved, and Martens tells him to control his people, and he's like, "Do not tell me how to run my squad."
Yeah, there's a lot of dick swinging in this scene.
Because
everyone's out there, like, getting all pissed off and shit.
Because then Sipowicz, who does something that would have got him in super trouble if he didn't have a good relationship with Fancy, or a decent one, or did his job really well, he then looks at Fancy and says, what are you letting happen here? Basically now saying, "This Fancy, what are you allowing them to do?" And when he realizes he crossed a line, and Fancy's like, "Enough, Sipowicz," he goes, "I gotta go look for this guy who's probably dead by now," or he couldn't keep him in jail. And as he leaves, he's like, "Does anyone on the Rat Squad follow us and catch us for running red lights?" And he conveniently...
He has to throw that, like, last dig in before he leaves.
And as he said it, he, like, screamed it into Russell's face, because he gets his jacket off the hook, his coat off the hook, and turns around as Russell's coming in. And he's screaming it, so he just screamed it right in her face. They go to the apartment of Steven, and they got buzzed in by a different tenant who let them know that she hasn't seen him for a couple of hours. He went to go take care of his trash. Simone's like, "Well, then let's go down."
Right?
Yeah, so Simone is like, "Let's go to the basement then." And Sipowicz is like, "No, I'm going to go over to that asshole Gary Wilde's apartment because he's probably over there dead." And Simone's like, "Well, I'll come with you." He's like, "No, you go down to the basement. We're all getting to be real lone wolves." And Sipowicz gets...
Why does Sipowicz always speak in, like, cliches?
Because it's Sipowicz, man. He's not super well-read, but he's very intuitive and slightly intelligent with people. So he has the need to say things like that, even though he doesn't really have the word power to make it really intense. He doesn't know. He doesn't have the word power to, like, make it really, really highbrow. He just knows how to dig in to what he's saying. Like, he knew that would hurt Simone when he said it because he's not telling him anything. And when he gets over to Gary's place, you know, Gary's just cleaning up after he's cut Steven up into pieces and put him into garbage bags.
Yeah, that was a pretty intense, like, reveal.
Because, yeah, it's a really good scene. It just sucks that Gary Wilder's the villain, because he's not a very good actor. Sipowicz sees it, and then starts beating the fuck out of Gary Wilder. And I gotta ask you...
starts whooping that ass.
Was he about to murder him before Simone came in?
No, I don't think he would have murdered him. Simone was gonna get there regardless, because he was in the building. But I think he was gonna beat the shit out of him.
Like, beyond recognition, but not murder?
Yeah, I think he was gonna, like, pull his gun out and, like, threaten him and shit, but, like, pistol whip him and, like, hit him with the gun and all that shit. I think he was gonna hurt him.
Because the show really likes to put Sipowicz in really intense situations right after he's been in intense, like, emotional situations. Because clearly he doesn't know what's going on with Simone. They're now looking into him and Simone when he knows Simone isn't a bad guy. And then he tried to help this one dude, and that guy ended up getting murdered and cut into pieces. So now he's, like, in a super intense fit of rage, and a guy he can take out all of his anger on, he really wants to, but then Simone comes in, he's like, don't do it. So I don't know if he was going to kill him or not. I thought he might have.
No, I don't think he was. I think he was just going to beat the shit out of him. Sipowicz is a killer in that sense. I think he was just really upset at the whole situation, but I don't think he was ever going to kill him.
They bring him to the house, and the guy keeps screaming that he was beaten, and he never confessed to what happened.
Yeah.
Sipowicz sees Cohen on the way up and says, this here's Gary Wilder. He cut up Steven into 27 pieces and put him into garbage bags because you let him out too early. And he's like, do you want to see the pictures? And he's like, I'll be seeing the pictures. And Cohen isn't his smarmy self. Cohen is very apologetic.
Mean, he knows he messed up, I guess.
Sipowicz and Simone sit the guy down, and the guy keeps saying that he was beaten, and literally nobody cares. Like, there's nobody in the department that's even acknowledging this dude.
Well, so, he claims about being beaten, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Sipowicz says, like, yeah, not enough. Oh, no, he's yelling it to Simone. And Simone's like, yeah, probably not enough, though. Well, then when he's sitting in the waiting bench, and they're all, like, bickering and shit, he keeps yelling he's been beaten, and then he's like, are you their boss? To Fancy, and Fancy's like, yeah, and he's like, I've been beaten. And then he just goes, yeah, probably not enough.
Yeah, they do not care.
Then they just move on with it. Like, it's a running, like, theme.
Sipowicz continues to dress down Cohen, who said, I wanted to come by to apologize for what happened. Sipowicz, like, basically Sipowicz just goes over what happens again. And Cohen responds with, well, it was only a robbery assault that he was charged with. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're not trying to do damage control. And he's like, I'm trying to apologize. And he's like, or you're trying to spin what happened. He's like, he was out on a $2,000 bond. He's like, it was a $20,000 bail. He's like, yeah, you're not trying to. Basically, they go back and forth. And then Cohen says, like, I'm not even writing today. I came to apologize. And he's like, well, then get the guy who's writing so we can send this guy to jail properly. Cohen kind of gets closer to Sipowicz. He's like, your wife is writing today, and I don't think she'd want to be a part of it given the circumstances, so I volunteered.
Yeah, but you know what? That's her job. So And it's her turn, and she's up, so she needs to take care of it.
I mean, the question I had was, did Cohen really deserve that much hate from Sipowicz? Because it wasn't just Cohen. Like, Cohen could have requested all that shit, and then they just set the bail, like, regardless of his recommendation.
That's true. I mean, I'm trying to remember what Sipowicz asked for, because I don't remember if he asked for, like, protective custody or anything like that. I don't think he did. I think he just asked for a high bail. But Cohen dropped the ball. He fucked up. Sipowicz asked him for a favor, and Sipowicz was more or less also being like, this is a bad dude, we need to make sure that this guy's okay, blah blah blah, and Cohen dropped the ball.
I just didn't know if it was fair to be that hard on him, because it wasn't just his fault. So when Sipowicz got really, really into him, I was like, hey man, like, it's not completely his fault what happened, and going at just him is only going to make it harder for him to help you out later with the same problem that you have now. So it's I don't know. I felt like it was also a lot of stuff compounded on Sipowicz, which is continued when Martinez and Medavoy come out of the meeting with IAB, and Sipowicz is like, so who got the 30 pounds of, or who got the 30 pieces of silver?
Yeah, what is that a reference to? Is that some, like, Jesus thing?
That's Judas. That's how much Judas got to betray Jesus. To
I didn't know the exact reference.
And then Medavoy says, I brought in Martinez to be my delegate, and Martinez is like, and he didn't tell him dick, Andy, which is what I advised him to do.
Yeah, Andy jumps the gun a little bit, just a little bit.
And then IAB comes to Sipowicz, and Sipowicz, because he's, like, fired up and on and banging on all cylinders, he says, having the right to counsel like I do, I'm going to peruse the yellow pages and get back to you. So then they look at Russell, and Russell says, I'm going to want to use the guy Andy finds, so it might be a while. So that's the end of their part in the episode. It's clear that the IAB squad, the Rat Squad, is going to be around. And they're up in all their shit.
But it's weird, like, no one is handling it well.
Well, I mean, I don't imagine anybody would. It's other cops looking into everything they do, and even Martin said, they're gonna look through your files, they're gonna find a mistake, and then they're gonna hang you out for it.
And he pretty much says, yeah.
We only got next episode to figure out what's going on, so I guess stick around, folks. Because it's getting interesting.
Yeah.
As you can tell by my enthusiasm. Every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at AstroBrothersPodcast, on Twitter at AstroBrosPod. It's mostly talking about when new episodes are coming out, and if you want to talk about the show, I usually talk back on those platforms. Have a good one. Thanks again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. If they have ratings and reviews, it helps us get seen in the algorithm. I wanted to make a quick correction on one of the quotes I said. Sipowicz's ADR line was, kiss my male organ, not kiss my male unit. I'm sure there are plenty of other things we got wrong while talking about the episode, but I noticed this one while editing it. I think you should just watch this episode because it's a very good episode, so it's better for you to dig in yourself rather than listen to us about the details. It's on Amazon, it's on Hulu for streaming. Get those services to watch every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you need more info in your life, there's always the books, True Blue, there's What Would Sipowicz Do, there's The Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue by Gene Kendall. There's tons of stuff out there, so get reading, get watching about the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and thanks for listening. There's no reason to make them unless you're listening, unless, of course, it's help you to watch the best show ever, NYPD Blue, so keep watching it.